From NPR News in Los Angeles and Slate Magazine Online, this is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Coming up, an insider's view of just how badly things may be turning in Iraq. But first,
we'll hear argument now, number 033334, Shafiq Rasool versus George W. Bush in a companion case.
That is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, William Rehnquist, opening today's session. The nine justices heard oral arguments in the first of three important cases about the war on terrorism. The case today centers on whether foreign prisoners detained at the U.S. naval base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, should have access to American courts. And as a sign of just how important the justices think these cases are, they're releasing audio recordings of the arguments. That's where we got that clip of the Chief Justice. We had our own ears inside the Supreme Court, though. They belong to Slate and day-to-day legal analyst Dahlia Lithwick. She joins us from Washington. Dahlia, welcome back to Day to Day.
Thanks, Alex.
So this case has been framed very narrowly, you tell us. It's not considering any particular claims from the Guantanamo detainees. Instead, it's just focused on whether U.S. courts can hear these claims at all. Now, why is it framed that way?
Well, jurisdiction is probably the least sexy word in the legal lexicon, but it might be one of the most important ones. Essentially, what it says is you need some basis to come before a court and seek relief. This is why my husband doesn't get to sue me for a divorce in Saudi Arabia, but it's also why people captured on the battlefield who are not American citizens, who have never been to the United States, may not have the right to seek relief in U.S. courts. And that is really the only question before the Supreme Court today, not whether they're terrorists, not whether they're bad guys, simply do they get to set foot in an American courtroom and seek habeas corpus relief.
So can they get in the American legal game? Now, the Supreme Court's always been very deferential to presidents in wartime. And from what you've seen, why do you think the justices are even taking this case and several others?
Right. Well, they did take this case, and it's good to remember that you need only four votes, not five, to take a case. And so fairly predictably, we can guess the four liberal justices were the ones who were exercised enough about these detentions to take the case. But certainly, yes, because these detainees lost in the lower courts, the Supreme Court simply could have said, we're not taking the case, and that would have been the end of it. I think one thing to remember about this Supreme Court is that while they're very deferential to the executive in wartime, this is not the Rehnquist Court, the most deferential court ever. This is a court that's not at all deferential to states. It doesn't hesitate to tell Congress it has overreached. This is a court that's very, very careful to preserve its own judicial power. And I think in that way, this court is a little different. The other important thing to remember is that deference to the executive in wartime leads to sometimes terrible results. Think of the detention of the Japanese in World War II, what became the Korematsu case that the Supreme Court signed off on. It's not an accident that Fred Korematsu, one of the detainees in that case, has signed on to a friend of the court brief in this case, just to remind the Supreme Court what happens when you close your eyes to executive excesses in wartime.
Okay, but here's what the Bush administration is saying, that these prisoners were captured overseas. They're now at Guantanamo Bay. Technically, that's not the United States. So U.S. courts really don't have any jurisdiction. Now, here's an argument against that. This is from the lawyer for the detainees. His name is John Gibbons. And here he is in court today.
Cuban law has never had any application inside that base. A stamp with Fidel Castro's picture on it wouldn't get a letter off the base.
So he's saying there's no Cuban law there. So if there's no U.S. law, then there's no law at all.
Right. I mean, certainly the detainees and their supporters in case are calling this a legal black hole. They're saying if no law applies, these guys can be locked up forever without any rights whatsoever. And this case, you have to think about it. All we're talking about is a 1950 precedent. There's one case called Eisenträger, where German spies who collaborated with the Japanese after World War II were found not to have the right to be heard by American courts. And the entire effort today was to try to sort of mash the facts of this case into that precedent.
Solicitor General Ted Olson making the case for the Bush administration, what did he say?
Well, he essentially said over and over again that 1950 case, Eisentrager, was spot on. It's exactly right that we've already decided this, that there are limits to habeas jurisdiction, that guys who are captured on the battlefield can't turn around 2 minutes later and demand their lawyer.
Even the dissent in that case said that it would be fantastic to assume that habeas corpus jurisdiction would exist in the time of war.
And he essentially said, look, not only should the executive have deference, but Congress should have deference. And Congress signed off on the war in Afghanistan. And if Congress doesn't like the habeas corpus statute, Congress can amend it. But it's not for the courts to meddle in the president's decision on how to pursue his war.
Dahlia, did you read anything into the questions from Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony Kennedy? Because they just often seem to be the key votes.
That's right, Alex. And I think, again, they are going to be the crucial votes in this case. O'Connor was actually quite quiet today for her. There was Justice Stevens, actually, John Paul Stevens, was much more enthusiastic. O'Connor did say at one point that the difference between the Germans in Eisentrager and the detainees at Guantanamo was that those Germans, quote, had a trial, that they had a military tribunal, whereas these detainees have had nothing. And that seemed to bother O'Connor at least a little bit. Kennedy, going back to that guy 10 minutes after he's captured on the battlefield, that really worried Kennedy. He seemed to feel like, are we opening the door for every single guy who's ever captured in war to have a right to come into American courts and contest his detention?
Opinion, analysis, and reportage from Dahlia Lithwick. She writes the jurisprudence column for Slate. Dahlia, thanks for joining us again on Day to Day.
Thanks for having me, Alex.